From the Center for the Study and Teaching of Writing at The Ohio State University, this is Writer's Talk. I'm Doug Dangler. Carrie Newcomer has been called the definitive voice of the American Heartland. She has performed concerts in a variety of venues, from folk clubs to schools and colleges to prestigious performance halls, including Carnegie Hall and the London Royal Festival Hall. Newcomer will perform at Six String Concerts on Saturday, December 5th at 8 p.m. at the Columbus Performing Arts Center. Tell me about how you started writing songs.
Well, I started writing songs when I was a teenager. I picked up the guitar when I was about 13 years old and learned my first three chords and wrote my first song. You know, I was always always interested in story and music. And very early on, I actually didn't come from a musical family, but I grew up in Elkhart, Indiana, and that's where all the band instruments were made at that time. So because of that, the public school program had a great, public school music program. So I encountered music really through the American public school system. So I'm a huge advocate for the arts in the schools. But I also loved story, and I loved, those types of songs. I fell in love with the singing poets, as a teenager. And that was how I started writing songs myself.
Do you still have any of those old songs, or have they passed over in the interim? What you first started writing songs?
I don't have any of those songs, which is probably good.
Tell me about your work with the writer Scott Russell Sanders and other songwriters in creating the album and the theatrical production of Wilderness Plots.
Well, Wilderness Plots was a really fun and interesting project, and Scott Russell Sanders is just a lovely writer who lives here in Bloomington, Indiana. And he wrote this wonderful collection of short stories from accounts and stories that take place about the time that this part of the country was being settled. And they're short, little one-page, two-page stories. And I belong to a songwriting group. There's five songwriters in this group. And we thought we would, write songs that would describe the different stories in this book, almost as exercise for ourselves. And we give each other challenges and we try new things together. And we started writing these songs to go along with the stories of Wilderness Plots. And we just had such a great time doing it. And the songs that were emerging were wonderful songs. So it happened very organically. Then it was like, wow, these are great songs. Let's make a collection. And we recorded it. And, this is such a wonderful collection. Let's do this as a theatrical production. Tim Grimm, it was part of that songwriting group, and Krista Detour. Scott Sanders, of course, is also a part of the theatrical production. Tom Rosnowski and Michael White. Tim and Krista both had a lot of experience with theater, so it seemed like a real natural unfolding. It was really such an interesting project in terms of how one thing kind of led to the other, and it was all because we just were just having so much fun and enjoying the process of these songs and the stories and the writing, and it was great fun.
Tell me about the challenges. You said you challenged each other to write. What kind of songwriting challenges went on when you were working on the project?
The songwriter group I belong to. I belong to a songwriters group and a prose writers group, and it's kind of to support one another, to be a forum for new material. But also in the songwriters group, we give each other challenges or exercises, things that we might not do otherwise. So, we'll come back next month when we meet and with a song without a chorus and make it work, or write a song from the perspective of a character in a play or a character in a book. Write a song that uses an old style, standard format. So we'll give each other different kinds of challenges. And it's very fun, and it stretches our edges. And I've grown a lot in this group, and I think all of us have. And yeah, it's something, there's been something really wonderful about that. You know, let's stretch out and try new things.
Have you recorded some of the songs that came off that Challenges? Will you be doing any in Columbus when you're here with Six Strings?
Yeah, I will. I have recorded several songs that came out of those exercises, you know, that we gave one another. You know, often what I've found is giving myself a context, an exercise like that. It's just a great way to push what I do just a little bit farther. And many of those songs I have recorded, and I really have come to enjoy performing live. On my last album, The Geography of Light, there were several songs that came out of this songwriting group, actually.
Is there a specific song off that album that came out of that exercise?
Sure. I think, there were several songs on The Geography of Light that came out of those exercises. Actually, the last three albums since the songwriting group began. But on the last album, the song Geodes, in particular, a song that came out of an assignment.
I always tell, but sometimes you just know. Round here, we throw geodes in our gardens. They're as common as the rain. A corn silk in July. Unpretentious browns and grays. A stain of Indiana clay. They're what's left of shallow seas. Glacial rock and mystery.
What was the assignment for geodes?
To write a song about mystery.
You didn't have the temptation to just leave it undone and say it was a mystery?
Well, no.
I guess that would be cheating.
Actually,
yeah.
But that's actually, you know, one way to approach it. Yeah, and I think also with that one, I incorporated the idea of writing a song without a chorus and making it work.
And you've got a song about email regrets, and there's a website that collects stories, right? It's called don'tpushsend.com?
Yes. The song Don't Push Send, it's kind of tongue-in-cheek, but it's about all, that phenomena of quickly dashing off a email that, you know, we should not have sent.
Push, send. Kara wrote about her job's frustrations. What drove her crazy with aggravation? A list of every person's faults with besides Sam's pithy wry insults. She sent it off to her best friend, but saw with horror as she pushed send. She hit the keys and
came out of a lot of different conversations of, you know, don't push send stories. And the song is about that, and it kind of throws out a few of those stories. Folks were having a lot of fun with the song, and so we created a website so that people could, you know, write in their don't push send stories and read what other people wrote. And yeah, it was a lot of fun. We put that up when the album Geography of Light was released, because Don't Push Send was part of that album release. I do have a new album that is scheduled to be released February the 23rd. It's called Before and After, and it's about transforming stories. And the song Before and After is really about that idea of the big experiences and small experiences that we mark our lives by. Sometimes there are experiences, we say, there's a before and there's an after, and life was never the same again. And sometimes those are big experiences. They're, you know, the birth of a child, the loss of someone we love, a wedding, a divorce. There's, you know, a graduation. There's large experiences. But I find, especially as a writer, that those experiences may also be very small moments. That maybe at the time we didn't realize would affect us so profoundly, that we would always remember that perfect thing. You know, like, how did she know that a cup of tea and it's going to be all right was exactly what I needed? You know, or in the song I talk about seeing a sky filled with falling stars one night, so full it looked like fireworks. and I was never the same again. So Before and After, that particular song really is about transforming stories. And a lot of, you know, every album has themes that run through it. And I think the themes running through Before and After really have a lot to do with moments. You know, we don't live days, we live moments. And stories, we all have a story to tell. And those stories change. And, you know, but the only thing that doesn't change is that everything changes.
Mm-hmm.
Also, stories, there's a song called Ghost Trains, and it's about, you know, those stories we tell ourselves that may or may not be real. You know, what is the looping story in the back of your head, you know, that if you just loop it enough times, it might turn out differently. At least that's the illogic behind it.
Whenever I talk to a singer-songwriter and they talk about writing the material, and especially material that sounds so close to your heart as Before and After, I'm wondering what happens to you as you go through and perform this song a number of times and you perform it in public when it's something that sounds like it was really personal for you to begin with. Does that change the meaning of the song as you go along? Does it make it somehow less personal or more personal for you? Is it difficult to perform some of them?
The way I approach songwriting, you know, it's very hard to write about world peace. You know, like world peace is just too big to get your arms around. It's like big topics,
right.
Redemption, you know, grief, whatever the big word is, it's too hard to get your arms around that. But I can tell a story, and I can tell the small story that gets to the large experience. So, you know, what I do is I use my own details. I use my own personal details because details make it rich. You know, it makes it real. But at the same time, always with this thought, an idea behind it that I'm reaching for what we both recognize, what connects us as humans, that it may not be your details, but it's written in such a way that it doesn't matter. It's about the human experience that we both know. I just returned from a trip to India. I was in India for just about a month performing all over the country for Indian audiences. And before I left, I really wondered what would cross borders in terms of songs and story. And, you know, what I found so powerful in performing for Indian audiences was, you know, there are things that we recognize that are universal. You know, you tell a mother anywhere on the planet that she has a beautiful baby, she'll just say, "I know." just like that, "I know." Yeah, but, you know, if you talk about, you know, family, and you talk about grief, and you talk about triumph and struggle, and you talk about the unstoppable quality of hope, you know, there's a recognition, you know, everywhere you go. And that was very powerful, very moving for me. And so when I'm writing, you know, and I'm using my own details, and I'm using personal stuff, it's always with that thought in mind. And I guess that's what makes it easier also to present it. Though there's always a risk in that. You know, whenever I put out a new album, you know, it's like I'm taking a risk. I'm taking a risk with something that's important to me. I'm taking a risk with myself and my own story. Every artist does that. Every writer does that, if they're being honest, if they're being true. So it takes a certain amount of courage to write authentically. But, you know, something really good happened to my writing when I gave myself permission to do two things. One was write the song I write today. And what I mean by that is, you know, a lot of times, especially when people are first starting into writing songs, they'll try to put everything they know, the sum of all their experience, into the song, right? And that's just too big to get your arms around. It just becomes general. But if I write the song I write today, you know, on the topic I'm writing about today, you know, then I can get a handle on it. And tomorrow, I have a lot of songs in me. So I'll write the song I write today, and tomorrow I'll write another one. The other thing I gave myself permission to do is sound like a Hoosier. And, you know, and I guess what I mean by that is, you know, I am from the Midwest. I have a very Midwestern voice and take on the world. And I'm never going to sound like somebody from the island of Manhattan, which is okay. I mean, that's fine because there's plenty of people there to take care of that. I mean, it'll be covered. But my right. most powerful voice will be my most authentic voice. That's the one that will reach more deeply. I mean, because we know, you know, you read something, you hear a song, and if someone's just kind of candy coated, and you know, like, you know, it just goes right by us. And we kind of know when someone's just saying something for shock value. It kind of flies right by. But when somebody puts their finger right on the open palm of something true and authentic, it shakes the world just a little bit. And, you know, so something really good happened to my writing when I said, you know, it's all right to go for my own voice.
Thank you very much for talking to me today. I really appreciate it. And I look forward to your coming to Columbus on December 5th.
Well, thank you. It's been great talking to you today.
Tom Crowell is from Columbiana, Ohio, and he's the author of Murder of a Journalist, the true story of the death of Donald Ring Millett. Dr. Crowell is a veterinarian and amateur social historian. He has published several articles in Timeline, History Magazine, and Man at Arms. Welcome to Writer's Talk today.
My pleasure.
How did you first get interested in the Murder of a Journalist story?
Well, actually, I had been doing some freelance magazine articles, which you listed there, and I'd gotten to the point where I thought I'd like to try a book. So I spent a couple of years looking for an appropriate story, one that hadn't already been done, one that could be book length and so forth. And I was reading another article, and I had never heard of Don Millett, and his name in the story was mentioned there. I did a little research. I found that it was a very fascinating story about an interesting and courageous man that probably deserved a book, was certainly long enough, and I just went from there with it. Okay. It's been a very, very interesting story, and it's especially appropriate for journalists.
Okay, well, tell me about why it's appropriate for journalists.
Of course, Millett was a journalist, and that was what he viewed himself as being first and foremost. He was the editor of the Canton Daily News, and his murder was the result of his crusade to clean up Canton during Prohibition. He led an editorial crusade, the kind of which you don't see in today's world, a newspaper editorial campaign. And a lot of journalists have studied it as a way of looking at his methods and how he succeeded and didn't succeed and so forth. And of course, he was awarded the Pulitzer Prize, posthumously, for his work. So it's a big deal as far as journalists are concerned. His name is still revered at his alma mater at Indiana University. There was, for a number of years after his death, like 30 or 40 years, a lecture series under his name for journalists. He is a member of the Ohio and Indiana Journalism Halls of Fame. So it's sad that his memory has sort of deteriorated to the point where nobody really knows who he is, because he is quite a remarkable journalist, and he certainly paid the ultimate price for trying to do what journalists aspire to do.
How did you go about doing the background? You said you did research for the book. What's the best way to research a 1926 murder?
Well, you start with the newspaper. You start with microfilm, microfilm readers, and a good library. And you just sit down and you start reading. In this case, there were also three graduate studies done by journalism students of Millett's work in Canton, and those were a big help as well. But there is no substitute for just sitting down, going through the papers. And then, of course, you take off on your various leads that you pick up in the papers. Of, you know, you go to census data and so forth to follow up on people and events and so on. But the real legwork starts with reading the newspapers at the time.
How does Canton regard him these days? Is there anything that commemorates him in Canton?
After his murder, Canton couldn't forget him quick enough. Don Millett's murder was bad for business in Canton, as you might imagine. Canton got terrible publicity. This story was on the front page of the New York Times for months. And this didn't help business in Canton, and so he was not the darling of the Chamber of Commerce. Mm-hmm. They tended to want to see him disappear quickly. And frankly, he did. There were a few things named after him at the time, and that lasted for some years afterwards. But today, you'll see occasionally a business or a place that might have the Millett name out in the area where he was killed on West Tuska. But other than a plaque in the Stark County Historical Society, which is in the McKinley Memorial down in Canton, there really isn't much to commemorate Don Millett. And until recently, he hasn't really gotten a whole lot of interest. Now, I'm hoping that the book will reintroduce Don Millett to a new generation of Cantonians.
Is a background for you a lot of true crime reading?
Well, I think you can't be a good writer if you aren't a good reader first. I think the best thing you can do is read. And yes, I did read a number of true crime books to get a feel for how the authors arranged things. That was part of the preliminary research I did to putting together the book itself. And that's just part, I guess, of the writer's craft. But you really have to get in there and see how other people have done it, especially when you're a first-time author like myself. Now, having gone through the editing and all of the work that's involved in getting a book finally published, I'm a lot farther ahead when I do my next book than I was when I did this one, because there is a definite learning curve.
Okay. What is your next book?
Oh, I'm working on several different true crime areas right now. None of them are at the point where I can really tell you that I have something coming, but true crime is gaining more respect as an area of social history, and it's certainly a fertile territory.
Who are some of the biggest names that, say, influence you on your writing? Is it Truman Capote, or are there other people that are you'd rather look at?
No, to tell you the truth, I will read and have read just about anything by anybody. I think you have to be, as I said before, you have to be widely read and a good reader to be a good writer, to see how the experts do it and so forth. And so I've read everything, science fiction, nonfiction, fiction, magazine articles, sports. It doesn't matter to me. I don't have a favorite. I just like to see how people do things.
As a veterinarian, what was the crossover for you into writing this? I mean, veterinarian, there's a specific kind of writing. You know, you're taking notes,
yes,
and everything
right.
like that. Do you ever feel that the veterinarian field has helped you as a writer or created some interesting issues for you as a writer? How does that work?
No, they're actually two different compartments of my life, I guess. They don't really cross over very well. I don't intend to write the next All Creatures Great and Small. I'm not the next James Herriot. That's been done and done better than I could ever do it. I've always been interested in history, and ultimately, I consider myself someone who's a storyteller of history, and that's what this book is.
Tell me a little bit more about the story that, as it unfolded here, to get, say, take us up to the big moment in the book, but don't reveal it so that people are forced to buy
well,
the murder of a journalist.
Well, obviously, you must know by the title he was murdered.
So, yeah.
So that kind of
reveals part of it.
That kind of gives it away. But basically, Don Millett came to Canton. He had been a newspaper man in other places. He'd been an editor. He had his own paper. Most of his brothers were in the newspaper business as well, and his father had been in the newspaper business. And Don had not been real successful and considered himself to be a bit of a failure. He got the opportunity to come to Canton. He was hired by James Cox, who owned the Canton Daily News, who you might recall was one of Ohio's governors. Mm-hmm. He also ran against Harding in the 1920 presidential election. But he lost, and he went back to his newspaper empire, of which he owned several properties. He hired Millett to come into Canton to take over the Canton Daily News, which was the number two newspaper in a two-newspaper town, not the most desirable place to be. Mm-hmm. And so Millett came in and decided that he was going to turn the Daily News around. And at the same time, he became involved in some of the shenanigans that were going on. And it was the Depression. Every place had shenanigans going on. There was lots of, not the Depression, but it was the Roaring Twenties, Prohibition. Lots of people doing lots of things they shouldn't have been doing. Lots of police forces not doing what they should have done to police. And so he began an editorial campaign to change all that. He stepped on some toes, but remarkably, the people that were higher up in the crime world didn't really, they kind of laughed him off. But some of the lower bootleggers and some of the lower level police didn't laugh him off, and they're the ones that formed a conspiracy to ultimately resulted in his death, although initially the conspiracy wasn't meant to kill him, just to beat him up and shut him up.
Is that the basis for some of the articles that you've written? Are those all different articles?
All different.
Okay. And I'm curious about the difference you've got between writing this book and doing those articles, because you've got a lot more invested in the book. How long did it take to research or write the book?
I spent about two and a half years doing the research and the writing of the book. Magazine articles are entirely different. In magazine articles, apparently, from what I understand from the editors, nobody actually reads the articles, they just look at the pictures. So the pictures are extremely important in magazine articles. And you don't have a whole lot of time to develop a story. I mean, there's not a lot of, you got 3,000 or 4,000, 5,000 words or something, you know, and that's why I wanted to do a book. And I wanted to have a chance to take a story and develop it. And I was extremely lucky, I will be the first to admit that, to have Kent State University Press accept my book and agree to publish it as a first-time author. Extremely lucky.
Why do you say extremely lucky? What is there?
What are the odds of a first-time author getting a book, an unknown first-time author getting a book picked up by a publisher anywhere? I'm sure your listeners are more than well aware of the odds of that. pretty long.
Does Kent State, is it specialize in this?
They have a true crime series, yes, and that's why it appealed to them. They also do local history, northeastern Ohio history, which is a rich area for history, but not too many people writing about it.
Why do you think that is?
I don't know. Well, there aren't too many people, to be honest, writing Ohio history, if you want to go and make it broader. It's hard to get the major publishing houses interested in those kinds of things. Mm-hmm. And I think if you're a writer who's trying to make a living at it, this isn't the way to go. It's mostly people like myself who fit into certain niches and do it as a hobby or just as an interest that tend to do this, and so there just aren't many people investigating that area.
Okay. Is there advice then that you can give to people who do want to start out in writing this or in writing the magazine articles? You said you've come a long way since you first started. What are the things that you've really internalized and learned from this?
Well, I think any of these nonfiction history type things that I've written require good research to begin with. You've got to make sure that you have your facts straight, that you have done good research, have it all correct. Then you have to be at least a competent enough writer to put it together in a readable format. And that certainly doesn't always come out of even reading newspapers and that sort of thing. And from there, you just have to really work at getting someone interested in publishing something. And I would certainly advise starting out small, but they also say you should write about what you know. So if you know something about local history or whatever, if there's something you're passionate about, that comes through, and that's the place to start also, a place to look for something to write about.
How did you get attached to Kent State Press? Did you send something into their slush pile, or did you...
I sent a proposal, and I wrote together a proposal. I sent it to 6 publishers that I thought might be interested. I did this after I completed the rough draft. I figured from what I read, well, this is going to take 6-8 months, a year before I hear anything, so I'll have time to work on polishing up my rough draft. So I sent it in to Kent, and 10 days later they wanted to see my rough draft, which was in no condition at that point to have an editor look at it. So I had to stall for a few weeks while I polished it up and got it ready to go. But I never thought that I was going to hear back from them in less than 2 weeks. That was remarkable.
Do you tell that story at gatherings of authors just to drive people crazy?
Yeah.
Yeah,
I think it really helps to drive people crazy. Yeah. I guess what I really want to say is, you know, it is possible. Mm-hmm. It is possible that, you know, it can happen. I had always read that it didn't happen, you know, forget it, it's not going to, you'd be lucky to find a publisher and all this stuff, but it can happen.
Okay. Well, Dr. Tom Crowell, thank you for coming on to talk to us today.
For more writers like Tom Crowell and Carrie Newcomer, visit writerstalk.org. And don't forget to catch Carrie Newcomer when she's in the town this Saturday. Join us next time for multi-instrumentalist, vocalist, and songwriter Ricky Skaggs, who will be in town on December 11th. Also, internet celebrity Grammar Girl, who will tell us all the things that we need to know about who, whom, and other fascinating grammar topics. Really, it's interesting. If you've enjoyed listening to Writers Talk, please let WCRS know. Also, you can tune in to watch us on the Ohio Channel. Just check ohiochannel.org 4 listings. Until next time, this is Doug Dangler from The Ohio State University saying, keep writing.